All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John Barber on the phone. And today, we're going to talk about the limits of muscle growth. It seems to be that a lot of people have this kind of overwhelming idea that muscle growth is limitless. And remember, as we talked about last week, we're not talking about muscle building. It's kind of a misnomer. So we're talking about muscle growth. We've got to get that changed up in your head. So I know John's got a lot of things that he wants to talk about today, a lot of sticking points or rate limiting steps that we need to go over that you probably aren't aware of. So let's go ahead and get that kicked off.
All right. So rate limiting steps, the best way to think of it, and there are literally dozens of them for each person. And depending what the major rate limiting steps are in your particular situation, will dictate how much muscle you can actually grow and how much you can sustain that growth. So the right off the bat, the first and the simplest one is genetics. But there's multiple factors even to your genetics. There is your general somatotype kind of idea. Like, do you trend towards true ectomorph, or do you trend towards true meso or endomorph? Again, those aren't strict definitions. Those are loose descriptive definitions of people's sort of base genetic muscle mass, so to speak, like what the starting material of your body, I guess you could say. So that's the first obvious one. Beyond that, there is a difference in people's durability. Some people just seem to break down. Like Pilon's a good example of someone who I call him a Band-Aid. He just breaks down constantly. He's still really strong, and he's still is built grown impressive muscle over the years, but that's not without running into his fair share of injuries. I don't doubt that he could have or can still progress, but he just continually runs into injuries. I'm not quite as bad as him, but I get injured relatively easily too. There's other people I know who just don't get injured. They just push through decades after decades. The type of guys I know that don't seem to get injured are also the biggest, the strongest. Like the power lifters that I used to train with are like that. Some of the guys who've made it to like the world class level just seem to either they just put up with the pain or they just don't get injured that much. My boss in Florida, when I was at the University of Florida, he was a professional baseball player for a few years. He was a catcher. And I asked him one day, we were just shooting the breeze, and I was like, what's the difference? Like, I don't get how major league pitchers get there without their shoulders just coming apart. Because every guy I've ever known who's been a quarterback or a pitcher, even if they got drafted to the pros, by the time they even made it to the pros, they'd already had their shoulder rebuilt at least once, and then they just never made it. And he said he said for no other reason, it just seems some guys are more durable than the others, and the guys with the long careers just don't break down. Even if there's drugs involved, you know, I'm sure all of them are still using the similar stuff, but some guys still just don't break down as easily. So there's something to be said for just genetic durability, and that goes a long way as far as being able to make it through each workout and continuing to try to stimulate the muscle to grow. So there's something to be said for your genetic potential for growth and your genetic resistance to injury or your durability. And that's just the genetic factor. Then there's a whole collection of lifestyle factors that probably play an even bigger role than your genetics, a bigger role such that you may not even know where your genetic limit is because your lifestyle factors are stopping you before you even approach your genetic limits. And by that I mean, how many hours a week can you actually dedicate to training? Like, how many actual serious hours per week? So some guys have it in their head that, well, I want to get to a certain size. I'd like to build or gain a certain amount of muscle. And look, I still say it. But given what? Given how many hours a week can you train? They're like, oh, but I only can work out 3 days a week. Well, my way of saying it is, there's a size you can get to given the amount of hours you can train. So in three workouts per week, if you literally only have an hour, 3 hours a week over three divided workouts, that's a rate limiting step. So you can only be as big as someone who can train 3 hours a week can be. And then there's another person who can dedicate 6 hours a week. Now that person's got a higher limit than you because they've got 6 hours worth of training that they can do, then you only have three. Then somebody else who can dedicate 10 hours has an even higher potential because they actually can put 10 hours a week. And obviously there's a limit to the number of hours that are even necessary, but most people don't even approach that limit. So that's another lifestyle constraint. Then on top of the actual hours trained, the next limit is recovery. And that's more of a systemic stress. I mean, Howard, you've mentioned this, the concept that there's only so much intensity or energy you have sort of in a week, and it gets used up in all phases of your life. So if you have a really stressful go at it at work, or something's, you know, going on at home that's taking away quite a bit of your focus and consuming your sort of reserve of stress, that takes away from what you can put into the gym. So even if your time in the gym isn't limited, your ability to push in there can be limited by the other parts of your life. So that's another limit. And
stress is stress. I mean, no matter the source, it kind of even goes into pain, where they've actually done some studies. I was reading something the other day saying that the exact same receptors, like you getting rejected from like the feeling of rejection, actually has sources in the same brain centers as physical pain. So it's like the same thing.
Yeah, and then they've shown that taking anti-inflammatories can also help with
depression.
Yeah, and with just your social interactions. If you're a little bit socially anxious, mm-hmm. Just if you just took some Advil and Tylenol, you'd actually be a little bit calmer and a little bit smoother. So the system can only handle so much stress, no matter what the source, physical, emotional, mental, all that stuff. So that's another limit. So now when you start layering all of these limits on top of each other, in most cases, it's not your body's genetic limit. It's the fact that you're not either spending enough time in the gym or not enough time in the gym at the correct intensity. Is what I would think 90% of people's rate limiting step is.
Mm-hmm.
So it has nothing to do with like, oh, I'm just not genetically built to build muscle. It's like, no, you don't spend enough time training. And most people don't want to admit that it just takes more. Like most people don't want to. I actually had an impromptu call with Mark Levy, one of our transfer. Well, I guess
watch list.
Yeah, on the watch list. Mark looked great, and me and him had a little impromptu call about this, and we were talking about like how much time do you want to spend? Like, do you actually want to become someone who literally lives that life? And it's fine if that's what you want, but is that what you want, or do you want to be as big as you can be within the constraints of, well, I'm only going to go to the gym 4 times a week and I'm only going to spend 1 hour each of those times. So whatever I can get in those, that I'm happy with that. But mm-hmm. if that part of your life is fixed, but you're constantly dissatisfied with your results, it's you eventually have to look at, am I doing enough? And in most cases, most people aren't doing enough, and that's kind of where their dissatisfaction lies. But the difference is, do you really know what it takes to be that much bigger? And that's the issue. Most people don't even want to admit or face the fact that it actually takes like significantly more work.
Right. Well, that's kind of one of the reasons and I think we've talked about it in the past. I always, even though we don't technically train for strength, I always have a strength goal.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm like the next, every time I go to the gym, I'm always trying to shoot to go a little bit heavier. Even though it doesn't happen that way. Like if it especially happens when I've taken a long layoff, like say a couple months, and you know, I know where I've been and I want to get back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that helps me out, obviously, because, you know, there's something inside the gym that I can see and touch and feel and notice.
But a straight strength goal eventually can't be the goal either, because there's a limit. Like, you can't keep getting stronger. So then beyond that, once you kind of cap out at the strength that, like, over younger guys will gain in strength. Then at some mm-hmm. point it will become, the weight just becomes too heavy that the system can't handle too much more weight without constantly getting injured. And then at that point, it just becomes volume. It just becomes more and more and more. Not more weight, but more reps, more sets, more reps, more times into the gym. So that's when volume and frequency both have to start going up.
Right, which is where I'm at right now and where you're at right now.
Yeah, most guys who've been at it for 10-plus years, they're as strong as they're ever going to be. And at that, you know, you might use 105s instead of 100s on something, or you might get to 300 versus 280 on something, but all of the major strength gaining has already happened. Now it's just how many reps can you put up with that weight, like just over and over again, more and more sets, and that's the only way to get the system to keep adapting. So that's where the rate limiter is volume. Most people's rate limiting step is volume. They just don't do enough, or at least they don't do enough to, if they're dissatisfied with where they are or hoping to go further, the thing they're not considering is that they have to do even more, like more than what they're doing, like more times into the gym, more reps, more sets. And this is where a lot of these like fancier tricks within the same workout become like what people fall for, that the fad of like, oh, there's a different way to rearrange a 30-minute workout to actually, no, there isn't. You just need more of them. So there's just, I mean, there's weight there. Now there's central fatigue and there's various forms of exhaustion within a workout. So obviously also you just get bored. That's why our workouts keep changing, because it's really boring to do the same workout over and over and over again. And the adaptation, if for no other reason, mentally, it's just so hard to just do the same workout over and over and over again. But if you can actually stick to it, the workout that will work the best is the one where you're doing the most possible work without breaking down. So what we try to do is get you to that without breaking you down, but also changing it as much as possible, so no given movement pattern is overstressed to the point where you break down. Because also, if you just do the exact same fixed movement pattern, any imbalance you have will start showing through worse and worse. So that's why we mix it up, like one leg, two leg, one arm, two arm, all that kind of stuff, right? So, but that's mm-hmm. that's just the technicalities of workout design. The overall answer is finding ways to keep you training as much as possible.
Right. So, for instance, like younger guys, you'll see a lot of younger guys. They do a lot of, you know, a lot more squats and deads and stuff like that, and they can do those more like every 2 or 3 days, right? Because they've got so much they can gain right off the bat.
Well, they have two things: their growth potential's high and their recovery potential's high.
Right.
Like their recovery's. I mean, I remember back when we were younger, we just recovered really easily. Now it's a bit of a trick. We can still recover, but it's just you have to pay a bit more attention.
Yeah,
now that I look back and just see what it feels like to be in my mid-30s instead of like early 20s, I get why pro athletes all want to use or do use drugs, if not early, later in their careers to last longer. Because when you're exerting your body at its like maximum potential, like it's just going to break down. Like sure. Once you're like the younger listeners won't get this, but anybody who's 30 and change or up totally gets that there's somewhere in your mid-30s, all of a sudden you just don't recover the same. And it sucks, but it just happens.
Well, it's the same thing as like drinking alcohol. Like for me and everybody I know is pretty much the same way. There's a certain time, it's 25 to, or 30 or somewhere right there, where like having a hangover, like isn't just, you don't just bounce back and you're ready to go at noon the next day. I mean, it like lasts days now, like 2 or 3 days.
Oh yeah, and you're just out of commission. Yeah, like yeah. You literally just don't have it.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same thing. I mean, your body's handling stress a little bit differently now, and it's just taking longer. So I don't know if that's relevant, but it's similar.
It's a good analogy. Well, yeah, and so basically, throughout your training career, I guess you could say you have to adapt what you do to kind of how your stage of training, your stage of your training life and your stage of your just biological life, like how old you are. Mm-hmm. And so younger guys can be, I guess, a little bit sloppier with everything they're doing because their growth and their recovery is both higher, right? So they can kind of – it's not as precise for them. I mean they're going to likely gain and recover faster than older guys regardless. But it's almost as if you get older, you have to be more precise with what you're doing because you have – well, first of all, your life commitments go up. You have more stuff to do. You have like less time, and I'll couple that with less growth potential and less recovery potential. Then it almost is like a, it almost seems like a point, not pointless, but it's just like, oh man, like it's just not the same as it used to be.
Yeah. So, and the other thing too is, I don't know if we covered this last week, but if you're kind of reading between the lines, if you haven't started lifting yet, there ain't no better day than today. It don't get no better.
Oh yeah, it does. It never, no matter how old you are, it always gets worse as you get older. So.
Yeah, so if you're gonna start, like today is an ideal time.
Yep, right now is the best time. And everybody can respond to training no matter how old they are. It's just so but I guess back to what our central theme of today is, like, what's your expectation versus the time you can put in?
Sure.
So you need to be clear with your expectation. And how many years of training you have, when you started training, how much you've progressed, how much time you can actually put in the gym, and how much intensity you can actually put into that time, like versus the stress and the various stresses of the rest of your life. So if you, you know, you have to look at it that way. It's like, and then you have to decide like how much of that is going to be part of your identity. Like, do you do whatever it is that you do, and then you take your training very seriously, but it has its 6 hours a week in your life, and that's it. Right. Or do you want to like compete, or do you want to like get into, you know, powerlifting or figure modeling or those sort of things? But then that becomes more of right. who you are. And then it's a financial thing. Do you want to spend money on supplements? Like, do you want to use drugs? Do you want to spend money on that? Do you want to explore that? Like, those are all like how many programs do you want to buy? Do you want to invest in a trainer? Do you have like a training partners? Do you want to like find training partners? There's
the,
do you want
the actual environment?
Do you want a home gym? Do you want to go to a gym? Like, there's also a financial investment there too. Like, I'm not going to say supplements are the be-all and end-all, but there's a certain, I think we talked about this, there's a certain amount of supplements that can do something, and they can contribute to some degree, but is that worth the amount spent? And do you have unlimited access to supplements? Like, when we worked back at Muscle Tech in the early days, we had unlimited access to supplements. We could take as many as we wanted. So we used to joke around that there's three categories of guys. There's guys who can buy supplements. There's guys who have unlimited access to supplements. And then there's guys who can buy steroids. And so the in-between group is the guys with unlimited access to supplements. And that's like there's an amount of supplements you can take that's like the amount that you can afford if you're just buying them in the store. But then there's another amount that basically no one could ever afford, but that might actually have very different results.
Yeah. You know what, I'm gonna say this, and I don't think you and I have talked about this, but I was telling somebody this when I was in Los Angeles the other day. But by the way that technically the FDA has been taking things off the shelf, I think everybody has technically taken a steroid.
Oh, at some point they've taken something that is now banned?
Yes.
Well, if you maybe not a steroid, but you just mean a banned substance.
Well, yeah, I mean, what they could classify as a banned, you know, something that's anabolic, pro-hormone, whatever. You know, it's now banned. It's now,
yeah, well, like ephedrine was banned, and just what everyone's tried ephedrine at least once, and then
andro and
yeah,
you know,
yeah, lots of different.
Now that what's the new 6XOO thing?
Oh, 6XOO. Yeah, there's all different kinds of pro-hormones. Yeah.
So I was laughing because somebody was making a big deal about it, and like, oh, all these people are on drugs, and you know. We don't care. I mean, just disclose it. If you are, you are. That's cool. If you're not, you're not. No big deal. But I was just making the comment. I was like, well, did you ever try Andro back in the day? And the guy was like, yeah, that stuff was awesome. I was like, oh.
it's banned now.
Yeah, what are you bitching about, man? I mean, you did it.
Yeah.
You were there. So
yeah, so it's a time and place, too. I mean, well, steroids in general weren't illegal, like, if you go far enough back. So
yeah, I think, yeah, 90s, right?
Well, I don't know. I think it's further than that. But the point is that they were originally developed for performance enhancement. There's like, oh, well, I mean, how do you make people stronger and faster? Oh, well, they, you know, they figured it out. It's like, oh, this testosterone has something to do with it. Oh, okay. Then they started developing testosterones.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line, I mean, there's a back history to it, but there's only certain countries where they're illegal. So it's not a closed case, so to speak.
Yeah. So let us kind of iterate something or reiterate something really quickly. We're not saying do them. But we don't take the hoity-toity.
We don't take any moral stance. I couldn't care less if someone uses whatever the hell they want. It's their choice.
You know, just understand what your goal is, and you know, that type of thing. So that's the big deal. So understand.
Yeah,
what your
if
goal
your goal is.
Is
to be 250 pounds and ripped, you can't do unless you're 7 feet tall. You can't. You're going to need some help.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. You know, same thing. You know, John and I were talking about it the other day. It's like you know when we get 45 or whatever down the road, and if things get acceptable, and you know, with the rate of breakdown, maybe.
I think hormone replacement therapy is going to become a more and more common thing for guys. I mean, it's already happening for guys, but I think it will become in the next 5 to 10 years. I think it will be completely commonplace.
Sure,
the guys in their 50s to be prescribed a certain amount of testosterone to get their levels back to what they were when they were 20.
Sure, to normalize. Yeah. So with that being said, we're talking about drugs and environment to a certain degree. And if you'll notice, everything we've talked about is exogenous. So it's outside. It has nothing to do with any rate-limiting steps or biology or chemistry.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think anyone will get to their biological rate-limiting step because they don't train enough. Like, you need to be – like, wake up, eat, go to the gym, sleep, get up again, go to the gym, eat, sleep. Like, that's – like, if you have all day to just exercise and then rest, and you don't have any other job. Like, you're literally commissioned as a as an Olympic athlete to just like do your lifting and go to sleep. That's when you can actually reach your genetic limit.
Yeah.
So, but nobody listening, none of us, and nobody's like that. Everyone has either school, a job, both, a family, like all these other things. So really what we're talking about is, all right, since you can never train and recover to actually maximize your genetic potential, how much can you train and how much recovery do you have and how much energy and effort do you have? And then based on what is available to you, then we can decide how big and lean you can get. And I guess in this case, we're talking actually about size.
Yeah.
So if you've got 3 hours a week, you've got, how big can you get in 3 hours a week? And then if you've got six, how big can you get in six? And then it's like, well, I'm 3 hours a week, but I travel a lot. So like every 6 weeks, I'm gone for 2 weeks. It's like, oh, okay. And then, you know, that's a different category. So this is why everyone's results are going to vary and everyone's going to be, like, everyone using this program, like 10 different people on this program are going to get 10 different results because of all of these lifestyle factors.
Right.
And it's like, who can actually put the full intensity into the program? Who doesn't need to constantly take breaks? Who's more durable? Like, that's the one genetic factor that probably you can touch on, is your durability.
Yeah.
Who's got more or less stress in their life? And then put all those things together, and then you end up with what you're going to look like. And then that's why it becomes very unique, or at least each person's look is going to be unique no matter what, because you just can't – just like you can't predict how people eat, like you just don't know how everyone eats. You just don't know what's going on in everyone's life to know that when you see them in the gym, can they really put in full intensity this workout or not? Like, how many – is it 50% of their workouts they push all the way to what they can and 50% they don't? Is it, you know, 80-20? Is it like once a week they have a good one and then they have three half-assed ones? Like, you know, I've gone through phases where that's happened, where I've just, for whatever reason, I've gone through months where I'm just like, man, it's like once every 10 days I have a good workout. Sure. And then I go through other phases where I have 3 or 4 months of just great workouts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of this stuff's not really measurable. The sets and reps matter, but only if you can do them at their full intensity.
Right. So I guess that's one reason people could kind of get away with saying blow past your genetic potential, because, you know, if you really think about it, it's kind of a theoretical set point that nobody could ever reach because all these things are in the way.
No, you could say go past your lifestyle potential.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like, if you're really stuck in 3 workouts a week, what's the way to make – not even – I keep using the word workout – 3 hours, because most people – it's 3 workouts could be 2 hours each. That still could be 6 hours. So if you're stuck at a 3 hour a week, like that's all you got at your disposal, what could you possibly do in 3 hours a week to gain to the degree that the next guy over who has 6 hours a week, assuming all other things equal? So let's say two guys, roughly the same genetic makeup, same genetic durability, same lifestyle constraints, like same busyness at work, same busyness at home. One guy can and they both put about the same intensity into their workouts, and one guy goes can put 6 hours a week in, and the other guy can do 3. The guy doing 6 hours is gonna beat the guy doing 3 hands down every time.
Yeah, sure. Even at the beginning, if they can only do 3 hours a week, the other guy has room to grow.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. The other guy will always win. So that's volume matters a lot, and that's just there's nothing else to be said about it. And right. If you can't get to the volume, then you're just compromised. I don't know what else to say about it. So you just have to accept or be realistic with your expectations. If there's only so much you can do, then just, you know. And I guess the real problem there is, how do you know? Like, how do you know if you've even reached what you can be at given your constraints? So I guess consistency is one way. Like, if you're really consistent and you've got a year or two of that style of that lifestyle and your training under your belt, that's going to start to kind of show where you can get to. And once you get to the point where you're still doing the same number of hours per week and your look is kind of consistent and nothing's really changing, but you're not atrophying either, you're just sort of staying where you're at, that's kind of the indicator that this is just where I'm going to be until I make a new change, until I add some new volume or until I add something. So it's going to level and plateau at some point, and then that's kind of your indication over time, oh, this is basically where I'm going to be.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's one of the reasons that we've said this. I said it a long time ago, but you know, choosing where you're going to train is really important. Like for myself, I always will default to the place with the hottest women. You know, and of course for that reason that, you know, I'm going to work harder while I'm there. I'm going to show up more. You know, so I have some type of incentive. You know, other people are different. Other people would rather, you know, train with, you know, bigger guys mm-hmm. around them and have them push them in that way. You know, so understanding that's a big step, you know, because actually showing up, I mean,
showing up's number one. I mean, a lot of people just blow off their workouts.
Yeah, that is the rate limiting step. That's the first one.
And then once you're there, what do you do with the time you're there? Are you just a chatty Cathy or do you just get to work?
Yeah, and a lot of people do that. I mean,
I think a lot of people just aren't honest. They're just like, oh yeah, I go to the gym, and then you see them there, and you're like, okay, I've seen you at the gym, and you spend most of your time chatting with people. You don't actually train.
You have great intentions.
Well, and then there's people who like they have short-term memory problems where they identify themselves as someone who goes to the gym, but they do it once every 2 weeks. But then they speak as if they go, oh yeah, you know, when I work out, I'm like, wait a minute, I haven't seen you there in weeks. But as soon as they've ever stepped foot in the gym, they just identify themselves as someone who goes to the gym. Right. I'm like, yeah, no. There are people who show up like infrequently like you, and then there's the people who show up and actually get work done. So I've been chatting with a few guys who are kind of, I guess you could say, veterans, and that's, We've come to the conclusion the number one thing people are missing is just the consistency and intensity. So people can go to the gym for years and just sit in their comfort zone and kind of go through the motions. And unless your workout is challenging every time, you're not stimulating any new level of growth. You're not forcing adaptation. So as brutal as that sounds, for the entire time you're training, over the course of your entire life, every workout should be challenging. And if it isn't, then you're not actually stimulating any new adaptation. At the very best, you're just keeping the system where it's at, but you're not pushing it any further. So, and that's kind of why following something written down is always going to be more beneficial than just going off of feel. That whole going off of feel is a load of crap. Like, yes, you listen to your body as far as injury, like, am I breaking down? But that's the only thing you listen to. Otherwise, you just do what's written.
Yeah,
no matter what program it is, as long as it's written by someone who's got at least a half a brain as far as training. It should be uncomfortable. It should push you outside of your comfort zone. If a workout is like, you know, you went in, you're like, you know, built up a bit of a sweat, you know, no big deal, wasn't uncomfortable. That means you were training, you weren't forcing adaptation. All you were doing was going through the motions that your current body is capable of. Comfortably, it needs to be challenging and relatively uncomfortable is kind of your very crude way of measuring that the workouts is actually pushing you into a new level of adaptation.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? I know we kind of had some indifference about intervals and things like that, but that is one of the things that is good about that style of working out.
Intervals.
Yeah,
that you perceive the uncomfortness.
Yeah, there's a definitive, you know, uncomfortableness in that sprint, and that may be why you see a lot of people getting great results from that.
No, because they feed off of that feedback.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they actually are now finally for the first time ever, you know, pushing themselves beyond, you know, what their comfort level is, whereas before, you know, because it's brief and things like that. So
sure. Just yeah, an hour and a half walk could actually burn the same amount of calories, but you don't have enough biofeedback from it.
Right. So you might go snack on, you know, snacky cakes later on and Cheetos because it was just, you were just cruising around. So, you know, yeah, just as an aside, here's something funny. I was just thinking of, do you think that some guys, and we're talking about rate limiting steps here, as far as being a mental rate limiting steps, do you think that they have some type of aversion to getting bigger because they feel like it'll make them dumber?
I've never heard of that or thought of it, but
I just thought of it. I don't know why.
I've never even considered. I don't know. Maybe you mean don't want to be labeled as a dumb jock or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think, well, at least younger guys, I don't think would think of that. Most of the younger guys who want to get bigger are just bigger at all costs, right? They don't. Well, I didn't. Clearly, I didn't. So
yeah,
I wouldn't have thought of that for a second.
Right.
Otherwise, people would have thought I was the stupidest person on earth.
Yeah, no. Like when you get older, in your 40s and stuff like that, you know, obviously you kind of getting set in your ways. I mean, I know I'm getting set in my ways, and you know, a lot of times when there's something that you don't want to do, you kind of pull it away, like you know you should do it, but you kind of twisted the truth a little bit, and you're like, you know what? Yeah, I don't need to do that because people are going to think I'm just a dumb guy if I get any bigger. You know, like they're all of a sudden going to explode, right?
No, that could just be an excuse or a cop out to not go to the gym.
Right. It's kind of like you know, if somebody was going to give you a Ferrari versus a punch bug, you know, I mean, almost everybody would take the Ferrari, right? I mean, if it was going to give it to you, sure, give me the Ferrari. But if somebody goes and they buy a Ferrari, you know, people, they won't say, hey, that Ferrari's cool. They'll always say, you know what? That's only for people that are, you know, whatever. And
the fact that you outlaid money, it makes a statement about who you are.
Right.
Versus accepting a gift, yeah.
Right. So instead of going for what you want, mm-hmm. which would be the Ferrari, you're knowing that you have to put in all this work to get there. Instead, instead of saying it's not worth the work to get there, I'm just gonna say I don't need it because of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you reset your goals and then you just come up with an excuse.
Sure. I don't know. That was kind of a side thing.
Well, it's an interesting thought. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I don't know. Maybe some people are averse to it. I mean, from what I can tell, most guys are always interested in building some more size.
Yeah. So what's the deal? All right. So we've got the stresses covered, the environment, obviously drugs too. I think we covered that to a certain degree, a little bit today, but really.
Well, it's resources and finances too. How much money can you spend? Like, I don't doubt that if you mega dose certain supplements, you'd actually get a little bit of extra help. And if, put it this way, if you're limited by things like stress, durability, and time in the gym, one of the only things you can do is supplement if that's all you're left with. But again, can you afford it? Can you actually afford to mega dose glutamine? Like, me and Pilon are toying around with the concept that, some of our new concepts about recovery and research we're doing, kind of people haven't really thought of it this way, and there may be something to be said for in the most intense phases of training to really pay attention to recovery, like really deep, like almost plan the highest intensity training in the lowest stress times of the year. So whenever you really think you can fit it in, that's kind of, you really want to match your intensity with your recovery.
So definitely not during the holiday season.
Yeah, not during the holiday season, not when like stuff at work's crazy, and like Jason Gottlieb, good for him for getting through the contest with how crazy his work schedule was. If he wasn't so busy at work, he may have even got even further with his transformation just because of his other constraints. So I mean, it's doable, but it's just you never know where you're going to get to. But it, as far as recovery goes, it's whatever you can squeeze out of your body for recovery. If you can't train anymore, then you have to be like really pay attention to how much you can recover, how quickly you can recover, how thoroughly. And, you know, maybe some extra glutamine would do that, but can you afford it? Is it worth the cost? Like, how is your budget? Like, is it, you know, because some people have asked me about supplements and I'm like, they're like, you know, is that supplement any better than just taking, like, for instance, a particular fat burner, is any better than taking just ephedrine and caffeine by itself? And I'm like, well, I mean, some people just like the ritual. There are a couple other ingredients there that might feel a little bit different than straight ephedrine and caffeine, but it's the cost. Like, if money was no object, then you could just experiment with everything and just see what happens, right? You could quadruple the dose and see what happens. But if that's talking about $30 and $40 per day, now that's just unrealistic. But when I worked at the supplement companies, we could do that. We could actually dose $20 and $30 a day worth of stuff, which the average guy – well, no one can do that. I don't care how much money you have. No one's going to spend that much money on supplements. So, but if you just have a barrel of glutamine – and the thing is, people don't get this. Some of the research suggests certain supplements could do something at a dose that's not viable on the market.
Yeah, we talked about it last
week. Okay. Yeah. So the point is, financially, can you afford to even approach one of these doses?
So,
go ahead.
Or if you can financially do it, I mean, would you not just find a doctor to prescribe something that would do the same thing but be easier?
Well, these are all the different levels, right? There's some people who are on hormone replacement therapy as prescribed by their doctor. Now, I don't know if they prompted their doctor to kind of do that for them, or if it's a doctor who sort of under the table advertises that he'll do that. He'll be like, hey, by the way, if you're looking for testosterone and you want a script for it, you know, I can take care of it. So there's that goes on. Some people are on hormone replacement therapy and they didn't need it per se, but they have a physician monitoring them. Then other people just, you know, find testosterone on the black market. Other people just wouldn't experiment with it. It's not on their radar, but then they might experiment with supplements. So some other people can't afford either. So they're just like, all right, well, I only have me in the gym and food. So that's the other level. It's like, what are you willing to do?
Sure.
And how much money are you willing to, like, some people, it's a financial thing. The amount of gains you might get out of a certain amount of supplements is actually more expensive than if you just went and got some steroids. Like, you can actually afford the steroids more than the supplements given the effective doses. And then if it's not like a moral or legal decision, then you're just like, oh, whichever one's cheaper is the one I'm going to use.
Not only that, but then, I mean, if you're going to start mega dosing stuff, I mean, now you've got to deal with, you know, everybody looking at you mega dosing stuff, and you're not going to be able to chow it down in one sitting.
Oh, yeah, you're kind of getting like tubs of stuff with you all the time. So it's.
Yeah. So now you've got that you're running into as well.
Right. So all of this comes back to. What's the training constraint? And again, the only reason people even get into all that other stuff is because, or at least one of the reasons that no one really considers it is that they're just not training enough.
Right.
Like before you even experiment with anything, you've got to max out your training first. And then if you're at your like maximum capacity of training, then it's like, okay, I push hard enough in the gym. I've managed to get the sort of collective stress level of my life down around it. I've got as many hours a week as I can put in the gym, and then from there it's like, okay, well then I'm still not satisfied with the progress. I want something else to help it,
right.
And that's when you can be like, well, you know, if a particular supplement might get me 5% more, that's still better than where I'm at.
Well, yeah, because if you don't do that, you won't even know if you're a responder or not.
Oh, and that's the other thing. Everyone's a different. Oh, well, yeah, that's a really good point. Everyone's response rate to training itself. Supplements and drugs is unique. So
right.
You can take 20 guys and put them on the same workout with the same supplements and get 20 responses. You can, same with drugs. Like, you just don't know how you'll respond until you try. So like two guys will respond to different exercises. Like, just some guys right down to the, for bench pressing, for me, I get more shoulder work than chest. And I don't know that there's any way I can rejig it. It's just kind of how I'm shaped. Whereas Pilon's the reverse. His chest just keeps growing. But he's really, really focused to get his shoulders to grow. So it's just everyone's shaped slightly different. Like, I never train traps. I just have them. So they're just there. But other people, like, train them like crazy because they just don't have that kind of trap slope. Just some people have it. So but I have to work on my calves. My training partner's calves are 20 inches. Like, they're just they're footballs. So everyone's got their thing, right? Like, they're like yours, right? So
yeah, mine are like 17, and
yes.
I don't train calves at all.
Right, and you never need to. So everyone's got their so that's just a simple explanation. I mean, so everyone has a unique response rate. I mean, and no one even considers that in the training research, is how everyone responds differently to training. Like, when you see even with drugs and even with supplements, when you see claims of how much muscle can be gained on a 12-week cycle of a drug, or on a supplement for 8 weeks, or even on a particular training protocol for 12 weeks, the research that you see is usually just reporting the average. When you actually pick through the data from each person, no one sits right on the average. Like, if the average gain was five pounds of lean mass, it doesn't mean every single person gained 5 pounds. Some people are 12 pounds. Some people are 2. So your response rate is all over the place. So then you got to drill down even further, look through the subject group, and find the person who's most like you.
Yeah, because the other thing is that with a lot of the stats, they take out the bottom and the top too. So
outliers just get wiped out. So if someone's like massively responds, it's like, okay, you don't fit on our normal curve. You just can't be a part of this. So, but what if that person had just a unique set of, I don't know, genetics and lifestyle constraints
What if that person was you?
Yeah, well, if that person was you, you're like, well, wait a minute. I was in the study. I responded. What's going on here? Like, how come? But the thing is, that's a major problem with research, and Brian brought this up in a former podcast, previous podcast, I guess, the idea of underreporting or poorly reporting of research. That data, and from being – this is from my own experience. Like, all that data is somewhere. It's recorded somewhere. Because whenever we run a trial, especially on humans, all of that data is recorded. It's just not all of it's reported in the study. But I guarantee on someone's hard drive somewhere, there is pages and pages on every single subject. There's very detailed data on each subject.
Every stat, heart rate, blood pressure, that type of stuff.
Whatever they were looking for. So when you see the aggregated average data, that obviously came from everyone's specific data. Right. So when you report an average, that obviously came from averaging all the individual data. So all of the people's individual data does exist somewhere. In most cases, it's not reported in the study. Like normally in the results section, you can't find subject one, subject two, subject three. You can't actually see their real data. You might see it plotted on a chart and things like that, but you don't get to correlate the guy who was a high responder, like the five guys who really responded. There's not like – you don't get to see like who they are, what their lifestyle was like. Like all of that stuff that someone in the lab would like see or have information on or just can pick up on from being around them, like training them for 12 weeks. You're like, oh, yeah, those guys are like really laid back. And be like, you know, the investigator themselves or one of the trainers might be like, oh, you know what? The guys who responded the best, they just pushed harder in the gym. Like even though we forced them to do the same number of reps, it's just certain guys pushed harder. Or they'd be like, yeah, I actually – a lot of research trials are done on the same group of guys who it's their friends in the lab who recruit them or they – it's there's kind of like a – I make a joke that like all the research ever done in these fields is done on the same couple thousand people. Like my buddy's over doing the biomechanics research. I've been in like 10 of his studies and it's literally me and about 10 of my friends. He keeps calling to be in all of these like backlifting studies and stuff and they're – all the data is meant to be used for factory worker stuff, like widgets on a line and that kind of stuff, and to see what's like our upper and lower tolerable limits and things like that. But they're studying a bunch of guys who are like former powerlifters, and I'm like, what? This information is not going to be transferable to your average like line worker who's never lifted a weight. The problem with human trials is it's hard to get people to show up for them and then do the trial properly. So you end up just reverting back to the same subjects all the time. Yeah. But the thing is, without having intimate knowledge of each subject, there's so many of these lifestyle constraints that sort of don't show up in the research. So you can have a 12-week training protocol where the average gain of lean body mass was 5 pounds, and you have your low and high responders. But there's just so much mystery about why you had low and high responders. You just don't know anything about those people. But there could definitely be a trend that isn't recorded anywhere. You just had to have been there to see them. And then all of a sudden, it becomes really obvious when you're around them for 12 weeks. You're like, oh, yeah, I can totally pick out the guys who are going to respond.
Well, yeah, I guess me and Pilon can cover a lot of this stuff and some of the new stuff next week.
Sure.
I think a lot of this stuff will translate over. So just so you know, so next week Brad Pilon will be on the show, and we'll be talking about some new stuff that the guys are going over. I'm having to do with inflammation and how it relates to muscle building. So I think you're really going to like it, and I think I enjoyed it. It makes a lot of sense, and it kind of really solidifies why we do what we do even more. Mm-hmm. So instead of finding reasons why what we're doing isn't working, we're finding more and more research showing that why we're doing what we do is working.
Is working.
So, yeah. So it's just drilling deeper and deeper that all of us are definitely on the right track and on the right path, you know, across the board. So it's going to be really interesting. Did you have anything else you wanted to cover? I mean, obviously, biology, chemistry, no need to really get into that in this particular one because, you know.
Well, I guess let's leave off with our little checklist of what. So it's your genetic starting material. So are you just a genetic? Do you trend towards ecto, endo, or mesomorph? In very loosely defined. Then from there, it's durability. And you probably already know if you're durable or not, if you're the type of kid who just playing sports kind of always pulled up lame, or if you're just sort of pushed through all the time. The next constraint is age, just biologically. How old are you? Like if you're younger, you just have way more potential than everyone else, both growth and recovery. Then after that, it's how many years have you trained? So I'm not speaking of your overall potential with that one. I'm talking about from today forward, the amount of more muscle growth that you have within you is based on how many years you've already trained, and then out of that, how many years and how intense that training has been. Then from there, now most of those things are going to be confounded, or you're not going to. They're going to take a back seat to your current lifestyle constraints. So how many? So that's the. I guess we're up to six now. So how many hours? Lifestyle constraints by how many hours a week can you even get into the gym? And then the stress of the rest of your life, the actual overall stress load on your system.
Yeah. And then the environment.
Then the environment, yeah. And then beyond that, and
drugs.
I guess what, financial. How much can you afford to experiment with various things? Drugs or not, even if you're just going to try supplements, like how can you afford it? Can you even afford like different kinds of food or not? Like just to, you know, some people maybe can't even afford that much protein. I don't know. It's like financial is still going to be an issue. If financial can even be an issue to the point, can you afford a good gym? Can you afford a good home gym? So things like that.
A magazine to find out how to work out.
Yeah. I mean, can you even afford a program? Can you afford like to buy a bunch of programs and then compare them and test them out, stuff like that. Then after, I guess that's it. I'm trying to think of, I think I had one more I was thinking of, but and then the final one is, do you have a lifestyle that routinely pulls you away from the gym for extended periods of time? Like, do you have to go on long road trips? Do you, do certain events just consume so much time that you find yourself out of the gym for 2 and 3 weeks at a time? So there's 10 or 11 variables right there. That all of them contribute to some degree on how much muscle growth you can really stimulate.
Yeah, maybe even pain threshold.
Yeah. Well, pain threshold itself. Yeah, some people who can push through more pain than more or less pain.
Yeah. And yeah, so there you go. There's 12 things right there. We didn't even talk about protein, food, or any of the biological things.
Oh, because all of that stuff sort of doesn't matter when there. I mean.
Get this stuff handled first.
All of this stuff matters more than that stuff.
Yeah, by a long shot. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, you're right. Going into the gym and noticing who's pretty regular and who's definitely not. Men and women. Mm-hmm. You know, I always have a feeling if I've seen a woman or a man in there, you know, more than 3 days in a row, I know what I kind of have a good feeling of what they're going to look like. You know, a month from now, or 2 months from now. You know, especially if they're newer. Yeah, it's really interesting. You can definitely tell who's serious and who's not, or who's just the curl guy.
Yeah, the beach workout, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, cool, man. So that's about it. You got anything else?
No, that's good.
All right. So again, next week, P-Line will be on the phone with me. We'll have some good stuff for you. So for John Barbin, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.